Hello, this is Jill Whitmore Welsh here, and you'll normally find me. I'll just reduce this volume down a little bit. That's better. You'd normally find me recording some form of self-help processes to assist people to be able to make changes. Some hypnotherapy, hypnosis, movement coaching, something similar. But we've got World Physiotherapy Day coming up, and I'm just very interested on the, in how the profession is these days. I qualified in 1977, and I'm just very interested in the way that the profession is going. And I'm making some quotes today from a book that was originally published in 1932. I've got the 11th edition in my hand, which was published around 19. Hold on, let me just check. 1987. I think up on my bookshelf upstairs, I've got an earlier edition of this, which probably would have been relating to when I trained. So that would have been around a 1978 publication. Let's have a look and see when one of those would have come out with a line. Yeah, there would have been a publication out in around 1974 or 76. So I've probably got one of those upstairs. But quite a huge amount of this publication that was originally, I say, from 1932. Quite a large amount of it is still in its almost original state, and so it's called, as I say, Tidies, Massage and Remedial Exercises. So here we are in 2016, and the world is as is now. I don't think of things in terms of journeys and progressions. The world is just another snapshot view, and here we are. With our profession of physiotherapists, physical therapists. And certainly here in the UK, I think we are going through some likely of a personality, a crisis of identity in the profession. And we have various new waves coming in. Exercise and movement is very much the new thing. I would say the new thing, but actually, of course, it's always been the old thing. And we've also got various organisations that over the years have been set up after the profession of physiotherapy changed for the first time. And one of those is the Register of Exercise Professionals. One of them is the, I think it's called SIMSPAR, I'd have to check that, but it's something like the Chartered Institute for the Management of Sport and Physical Activity, and that's relatively new. And certainly with REPS, Register of Exercise Professionals, that was set up, I don't know, 15, 18 years ago or something similar, they really never wanted physiotherapists to become members. They didn't consider that we were exercise professionals, hadn't done any of their courses, I think is probably more likely, she says cynically, but anyway. And then we've got this new organisation that's been set up, and when I recently contacted them, what they said to me was that if I could map across the contents of my original training to their syllabus now. And I have to say, I sat down and thought of doing it, and then I thought to myself, goodness, you know, do I really have the details of what I did back in 1976 or something similar? So we've had changes that have taken place since I did my training, and obviously since this book was written. And there have been changes in the industry. There have been changes because personal fitness trainers, for example, the industry of personal fitness trainers didn't exist in quite the same way at all when I trained as a physio. And neither did really the exercise teacher in the same way. We didn't have the same gym system we have now. These sort of big gyms didn't exist. And the whole structure and way that things work has changed. But when I went through this book, this Tidies Massage and Remedial Exercises book, what I found quite interesting was that there is quite a chapter at the back about class work. And I when I say class, I don't mean social class, I mean what we would, or what I would reference now as groups. So groups of groups of people doing activities together, exercise activities together. And again, this was something that when I qualified in the late 1970s, we were taught how to take somebody, let's say, from initial admission in hospital all the way through to discharge, through to full stage rehabilitation, to get the person back to work. And part of that included being able to decide what form of group work it would be suitable for that person to do. So they were exercising with other people. We had rehabilitation centres in those days. Most of those were closed, and then a few have opened up again as new rehab centres for neuro or spinal or whatever. But we had Ansted Park, we had Farnham Park Rehab Centre, and those closed over time. Certainly, I think Farnham Park closed around 1984, something like that. So I'm just going to reference a little bit of this book because I think this publication is, it's quite fresh. We're going back to what we've done before. And in this book, we have a reference here to class work, as I say, what we call group work. And it says in the book, reference has been made in previous chapters to the treatment of patients in groups or classes. Class work, used at one time, to be associated almost entirely with educational gymnastics. Those suffering from any disability almost invariably received individual treatment. But for many years now, especially since the increasing number of patients in physiotherapy departments and large clinics has made it necessary to treat as many as possible in the time available, it's become more and more a practice to group patients into classes. This has since been found to have other advantages than mere saving of time. Some physiotherapists like this type of work. Others prefer dealing with individuals separately. This is largely a matter of temperament. But whatever a physiotherapist's personal preference, it's necessary that he or she should at least be able, if and when required, to organise small classes, and that while obtaining the advantages of group work, she is able to do justice to all the individuals composing that group. So it then goes on and describes the advantages of class work, selection of patients, size of the class, the relationship of the physio to the class, place for the class, the apparatus, dress and assembly, what they should all wear, arrangement of the class, the choice of the class, progression of exercises, how to do ward classes. Then there are chapters on children's classes, treatment of aged and chronic patients, the bedridden, psychological approach, and I think I'll read a little bit about that because that looks lovely, and it says a psychological aspect. This is all important in the rehabilitation of elderly or chronic patients. Much tact, sympathy, and patience are necessary. Some patients are cooperative, others, for a wide variety of reasons, are the reverse. Some patients feel they cannot face the world again after their stay in hospital. Others dread becoming a burden to their relatives. An anxiety state or even a form of hysteria may develop as an escape from unbearable social conditions. Even with the most willing and cooperative patients, progress is often very slow, and none is possible unless the cooperation and confidence of an unwilling patient have first been gained. A different, though similar, set of problems arises where the patient is in his or her own home. The preference of a helpless invalid in a busy household does add enormously to the housewife's burden. As a result, all sorts of unfortunate reactions may arise between the members of the family. If the invalid can be made even a little less dependent on others, the situation may be definitely relieved. Should he be entitled to get about by himself, even with difficulty, to feed himself and attend to his own toilet, the improvement in his physical and mental health and of everyone's tempers will be a result infinitely worth having. I wasn't intending to read that section, but I have to say it made me smile because we reference the psychosocial aspects of health. And here we are having written in very simple words what it is that we're talking about. So we then go on, and as I say, this particular chapter, it goes into different forms of exercises. There is even a section which I'll reference to do with relaxation, and I'll bring that in at another short podcast. But I think what we need to remember is that up until probably, I would say, the late 1980s, perhaps even up until perhaps 1990s, there were some physiotherapists completing training courses where this form of group work, class work, being taught how to structure groups and classes was commonplace. And yet now, when we think about healthcare, we are at a point where, for various reasons, we are almost being put as a profession into a place of stopping treating people when they get to the door of the hospital and are discharged home. And I think we need to reference back at times to historically where we have been involved with the work. So, for example, if somebody has had a stroke, let's say a brain injury, a stroke, when they go home, this idea of them coming and having exercises one-to-one or rehabilitation one-to-one or attending a group is not new. This idea is something that we have done for many years. A group of people coming in who, for example, are amputees, a group of people coming in who have all got back pain and attending what we used to call back school. People with chronic pain having group work together, the support of each other, people who have had fractures or health-related problems, group work, again, is a classic part of the structure of what we've always done. So if we look at the history of our profession and we ask what is it that some of our new graduates now coming out from university are missing, they probably are being introduced now to strength, conditioning, one-to-one work, it may even be group work. What I'm saying is this is part of our history. This is part of our heritage. It is part of what happened when the remedial gymnasts were integrated into our profession back in the early 1980s. And as I say, I think when you read and look at books like this, and you can see just how important the gymnasium was in the work, that group exercises and games, people being able to talk to other people, which is, you know, using competition, the elderly patients in the gym references, these patients often derive a good deal of advantage merely from being able to get out of the ward into a different environment. There they will meet and talk with other people, will compete with others in exercise. Often a healthy rivalry develops, which can do much to encourage the depressed and enliven the apathetic. The exercises should be as interesting as possible. Beanbags and light balls or balloons may help to vary the program, and in some cases games such as darts, quoits, or a form of bowls may be played. Well, these days we hopefully would get out a virtual reality set and put it on the person's head and get them playing a game or Wii Fit or something similar. But these concepts are not new. And I think this is really, 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 really important when we talk about our profession, that we also have a respect for what it is that's gone before. And we aren't promoting this as, oh, well, it's new. We want to start doing this now. We want to start getting involved in community activities. No, this is classic. This is traditional. This is part of what we've always done. And I hope that's been helpful. And I look forward to getting some comments and feedbacks. And thank you very much.